I really have a bit of an issue with people who go, oh yeah, strategy is just about asking the right questions. No, it isn't. It is absolutely about asking the right questions, but it's also knowing what to do with those answers. Mm. It's about facilitating people so they can give you meaningful answers to those questions.
I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women.
For episode 73, we are joined by brand and strategy consultant and founder of Brand By Me, Colette Phillip. Colette and I met about a year ago, the evening we were both awarded a Wacol Future Leaders Award. And, by chance, were reconnected by the fantastic Bumble Davis a few months later. Both bubbling with ambitious plans, we agreed to become accountability partners and have a scheduled call where we discuss what we're aiming for the coming month, but also what we've achieved for the past. It is a practice I didn't know I needed until it happened, and we often both leave the call fully pumped and focused. Colette is intentional. She can cut through the noise, and her super strength is strategy. She completed a BSc in International Management and German in the year 2000, and on graduating, immediately landed a role as account director at mega media and comms agency, Grey. Over a period of 6 years, she worked for a number of Adland's greats, Leo Burnett, Havas, and Jones Knowles Ritchie, scaling up her position with each move, ultimately in the capacity of global account director. With a love for animals and a real desire to use her talent and skills for the greater good, she took a role at children's charity Barnardo's, initially a senior marketing officer, but over the 2 years she was with the organization, her role pivoted, firstly to head of brand and new media, and then to assistant director of marketing. She then went on to freelance for other organizations, and a brand audit she did for the World Society for the Protection of Animals resulted in a longer term stint, nearly 4 years, where she rose to deputy director of international comms. After 18 years of building and shaping other brands, she decided to found her own, setting up Brand By Me in 2016. With a team of five and numerous freelance partners, the organization works with businesses in-house on a consultancy basis, mentoring people and running workshops. To mention a few of their clients, the Royal Air Force, My Local Economy, and Namaste Culture. Particularly resonant for each and every one of us at this precise moment in time, where we find ourselves in the midst of a global pandemic, I took a quote from Brand By Me's website to give you a sense of Colette's drive for positive change. We must actively do good and be the best we can. We all have responsibility to do business in a way that has positive impact on those around us, whether they work for us, work with us, or come into contact with our product or service. And that's why we, Brand By Me, work with ambitious leaders, founders, change makers and entrepreneurs. And Colette doesn't mess about. 2 years after starting the business, she bagged a precious Creative Business of the Year award and received a highly commended independent consultant award from Women in Marketing. And as forementioned, she was a 2019 Wacol Future Leader winner. I mean, Colette, I could keep going. There's no shortage of accolades to shout about, but let's hear it from you. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you.
So can we skip right in? And I'm wondering if you can talk to me what you do as a brand strategy consultant and as a founder of Brand By Me.
It's really good to recognize because they are different jobs, which has taken me something in the business a little bit of time to realize, because my happy place is brand strategy. It's what I love to do. My role as founder is different, and it sometimes takes me away from the brand strategy stuff I love to do, which, you know, it's something I've had to get used to. So as a brand strategist, my role is, and you said it very well in your intro, is to work with leaders within organizations to help them define, develop, and build brands in a way that drives real change. As you mentioned, I pivoted my career from advertising to working with sort of charity sector, and that pivot was deliberate, and it meant that my business now really focuses on brands that drive social change. That doesn't mean just working with the charity sector. It means working with any organizations who are really looking to use their brand to create social change and or positive business impact. You know, some of the brands that I've worked with, you know, have been commercial organizations, but with a strong social purpose, mm-hmm. and whose sort of the main thrust of their efforts goes towards creating social impact. So the brand strategist, my role is to really help leaders delve into the brand. So look at their purpose, personality, vision, and values, make sure they are super clear and compelling and consistent and authentic to the organization. And they're clearly understood by audiences. And then look at what that means for an organization strategy. So, you know, if you look at your values, what does that mean in terms of your people and culture? If you look at your vision, what does that mean in terms of your three-year objectives and goal? If you look at your purpose, what does that mean in terms of your role in the world? And actually, how can you use that as a lens to make sure that you're only doing things that are on purpose or mostly? So that's the work that we do at Brand By Me as brand strategists. And then the other side of it, well, I'm responsible for the financial planning of the business. I'm responsible for the resources. I'm responsible for the marketing of the business. It's basically all those other bits of running a business. And that's what your role is a founder. You play many hats. It's good. I have a team now that kind of support me in that. And that's been really brilliant, actually. It's allowed us a number of opportunities and to really sort of start to deliver at the impact and I guess at the scale that we really wanted to. But yeah, that's a bit about me and my two hats.
And so how do you manage that tug of war, that juggle between the multiple hats of running a business that you founded, but also your love and being a consultant, a brand strategy consultant?
It is tug of war. And the honest answer is not very well. I tend to go to my happy place of brand strategy, particularly when we get into our busy time, which is usually between May and November. I will go into my happy place of brand strategist and then really neglect working on the business. And I've had to really learn to step back. And that's where having the team again really helps, because it's not only me just leading the delivery of it. But because, as I said, I love brand strategy. I love working within organizations, it took me a long while not to resent and see it as a tug of war in terms of anything that pulled me away from that, and see it really as, you know, part of my role and my responsibility as business owner.
That's tough, isn't it? Like, I think about that, especially with Greater Than 11%. I think about the things that I love doing, the things that need to be done.
Yeah, and there's a school of thought that says that actually there's a really good kind of matrix. I think it's something like, you know, stuff you need to do and stuff you're great at and stuff then you really love to do. And you map them all out. And the stuff that you're not great at, don't love, but need to do, that's the stuff you outsource. But fundamentally, it comes down to this. There are stuff that you may not like to do, but you're going to have to. And you're going to have to get involved. Even if you delegate it out or even if you outsource it, you're still, as business owner, going to have a handle on what's happening in those areas. So there is a part of it that is just getting used to, you know, doing stuff you're not quite comfortable with or you don't love, but making sure that there's enough of the stuff you do love that it keeps you going and keeps you fueled and energized.
Yeah, that's a great tip. So I wonder if we can talk about Brand By Me and hear from you why you decided to start the business. Like, why did you pivot away from Adland, basically? And secondly, a little bit more about your service offering.
I stepped out of advertising in Adland in 2008 or seven. So for brand side, I'd worked on brands and I was working in the charity sector, which I love the impact of brand strategy in driving real change and like helping people get very complex issues. And so I was at a charity called World Animal Protection, which I'd actually rebranded from the World Society for the Protection of Animals. It was a global rebrand. I was heavily involved in then delivering the organizational strategy off the back of that. You know, and I spent about 4 years at that charity. And I think two things happened. One, frankly, I hit a bit of a ceiling in terms of being able to progress upwards and develop, and I was really looking for a leadership role. But the second thing was, I also felt that I had exhausted the change I was able to deliver at that charity in my role. So I decided that I'd take a career break, and it was about 3 weeks into the career break, I literally woke up one early hours of one morning and was like, I've got an idea for this business. This is what I need to do. This is what the offer should be. And it should be called Brand By Me. So it was about helping medium-sized organizations and maybe a few smaller ones too, really develop and build brand strategy and maybe give them access to the big brand thinking that you don't get unless you go to really big and often expensive agencies. Mm. And I wanted to create an agency with a different business model that could flex according to the needs of clients. And that was the vision. And it was super clear to me. And it was super clear the kind of organizations I wanted to work with and all around this kind of brands that drive social change. That's pretty much what we do at Brand By Me. So we're all about helping, as I said, leaders drive social change and positive business impact. What that looks like, Brands for Social Change is really clear in terms of its defining, developing, building, articulating brands and working with organizations then to look at what it means and create really tangible action plans and sort of processes that help the brand really embed and drive the organization forward. And so then on the positive business, that looks slightly different. That involves working with larger, typically corporate organizations to look at areas where their brand gives them the potential to do business better or to do good stuff, to do stuff that's good in the world. So quite a lot of the work we do at the moment is around personal brand for employees with the organization, with a view to really championing employees from diverse backgrounds and helping grow, you know, a more diverse group of leaders. And the power of personal brand is brilliant at that. Or it is about helping them look at their brand differently and maybe identify opportunities where they can really sort of drive social impact in what they're doing by developing, you know, programs, by partnering people, you know, really look at the potential of the brand for good, even if the brand itself is a commercial, very corporate brand. There's always an opportunity to look at brand for good and to really look at the very core fabric of the brand, to look at the purpose of the organization or look at the values and go, well, if these are your values and you're doing this, why don't you do it for these people and it will create this massive impact? It's that sort of thing. Which, as I said, sounds completely vague because that is something that is super bespoke and sort of varies. But as brands are different, that massively varies what that positive business impact looks like.
Yeah, it's quite intense as well, isn't it? I guess you've got a really holistic overview and then you have to kind of reorganize depending on what strand you're in, obviously.
I like intensity. I like to get involved. But I recognize as a consultancy, this is not about, and one of my real frustrations when I was in-house within organizations was maybe consultants who tried to sort of embed themselves in the organization in a way that actually the organization wasn't growing and learning. Mm. So our approach is very much, yes, it is intense, but it's very much about upskilling our leaders and organizations, and not just leaders in the brand team. That's really important. It's not just about brand and marketing. It's across the organization, really upskilling and empowering leaders to look at, to understand brand and to know what it means for their business area and really use that for good. And then we step out. It's really important that this, you know, from a brand point of view, it needs to embed within the organization and it needs to be the organization that takes ownership for it. It can't be something that's done to you.
That's such a good point because so many, especially of the bigger consulting houses, you know, they embed themselves and basically it's codependent. You can't move forward without them. And you also probably don't think you have the skills to move forward without them. So it becomes this catch 22 of you have to keep paying them retainers or bringing them in for big projects. So I love that you're about sharing that information and skill set and growing people.
When you're a brand agency that's about social change, it does mean you have a really strong set of values. And I mean, obviously, from a business point of view, that is a very savvy business model to embed yourself and assert yourself in the organization so the organization has to keep paying you. But I think from an organization point of view, and particularly in driving change, what that does is stifles the organization. It limits their ability for innovation. And I really, really struggle with it. I don't like that model. And I really, it used to make me cross when I was within organizations and I encountered that. And certainly now running my own agency, we're just not going to do that. It would make it easier on our bottom line if we did do that. But that's not the point of this, really.
Love that. So, I mean, I mentioned a couple of your clients in the intro and you talked about the organizations you worked with. But, you know, who are typically your clients? And what do they get from working with you?
So the business grew really quickly across 2017 and 2018. What that meant was we sort of got shifted into a certain client base that was basically medium-sized charities. So you said, I think RAF Benevolent Fund, so the charity arm of the RAF, we worked with a peace-building charity called Conciliation Resources. We had any number of sort of charity clients, and that was lovely and social impact work. But I said at the beginning, it's not just about charity sector who are responsible for doing good. So we've worked with a number of very small, purpose-led, small businesses, and I really believe in small, independent businesses, that are just doing stuff that drives change. We've also started to work with much larger organisations, as I said, around like looking, helping their brands look at how to, you know, deliver social impact and use their brand as the blueprint for it. And also on the personal brand within organisations. So our client base on the social change side tends to be medium-sized organisations that have social change as the core purpose of what they do. Not just charities, it can be social enterprises and corporates, but as long as that social change is at the heart of what they do and that's what the delivery is. On the bigger sort of positive business side, it's much less about the organisation and much less about the person. So we tend to work with heads of department or above that are really passionate about delivering change within their organisation and trying to look for an opportunity to do that. So either they've spotted an opportunity around an area they're passionate in, like diversity and sustainability, and have got an idea, and then it's about linking that to the brand. So rather than becoming a pet project, it becomes a kind of an organisational-wide project that people can buy into. Or it's understanding that they've been given the remit of doing something that is purpose-led for the organisation, and because they're not at a C-suite level, it's helping them then really navigate this change, build the case around brand, build the case around the business, and really sort of bring people into it in a way that that can be delivered.
I was just thinking about all the potential, well, all your clients and all the potential clients that you work with, and it's such a range, actually. It must keep it quite fresh for you and your team.
Yeah, it's very varied, but also people spot unexpected parallels. And I think because we work with such a breadth of different organisations, we have the ability to talk to them and give them very unexpected perspectives on brand. So I know that there are, you know, agencies that specialise. We only do international development. Mm-hmm. The problem being that you kind of succumb, and that's the case in terms of as an individual, if you specialise in that way, sometimes you can succumb to kind of groupthink and category think. Whereas even in my career prior to Brand By Me, I did jump around in terms of sector and brand quite a lot because I love the variety of that. But I also like parallels. As a strategist, I kind of look for patterns and parallels. And I really like those, as I said, unexpected partnerships and parallels you can draw if you've worked on the breadth of brands. And that's certainly the case for us as an agency. So I remember working with a development finance organisation. So they're very city finance based and kind of looking at kind of investments. The purpose of it was all about like helping raise funds and then deliver infrastructure that drives international development in very fragile kind of markets. And I remember using one of my other clients that was a tiny small business that did healthy eating through restaurant menu consultancy. And I remember using them as an example and saying, actually, I know you feel totally different, but actually here's some parallels between your brands and here's what we did here. And here's what I think it means for you. And it was, in terms of size of the organization, completely different, but it really helped them understand sort of the impact and potential that the brand could have. So I really love that variety.
That's awesome. So I'm wondering, did you always want to work with big brands and strategy and kind of social good and social change? Kind of what was your career trajectory? How did you arrive to now?
I think there's two things I've always wanted to do since being a little kid. I've always wanted to kind of help people at scale, and I like being a leader. I am an oldest sister, so I was always the oldest one in the family, and I really love that, and I like that. I like being a leader and like helping people. So originally, honestly, my career plan when I was about six was Prime Minister. I really wanted to be the Prime Minister because I thought it would be very cool for a black woman. We had, at the time, it was Maggie Thatcher, and I was, you know, not old enough to really understand the politics of it, but I thought, okay, that's a woman, that's okay, but a black woman would be better. And I remember seeing like politicians like Diane Abbott, and then there was a really famous QC as well, who I just thought, a barrister, and I thought, actually, that would be really cool. So then I, as part of my Prime Minister trajectory, I thought, okay, I need to be a barrister. And then I worked out that in terms of law, there are two sides of it and you're not always on the right side. So I abandoned that. And then I went off to university. I even did my choice at university not really knowing what I wanted to do, knowing that I loved languages, but not necessarily kind of the sort of history and art side of languages. It was about the language itself. So I applied for lots of modern languages courses, realised there was a whole load of sort of history and stuff in there that I wasn't interested in, threw two business courses in on the list and got into international management. And that's where I really sort of got an understanding and a real love for marketing, in fact. I did some work experience in various brands. At the end of it was like, I'm not sure about the marketing bit of it. There's bits I like. My boss that was running my placement there said, why don't you look at advertising? So I was very dutifully went off and I got a job in advertising at Grey. I started as an account manager. It was a time before kind of brand consultancies, when brand consultants were doing kind of packaging and physical branding versus strategy. And so as advertising agencies, we do the brand strategy in bits just so we could do ads, because actually you can't advertise a brand unless you understand it. And for us and our clients, that was kind of a journey we went on together. But we did bits of brand, I guess I would say now, and I understand that. I loved it in terms of working with brilliant people and on brilliant brands, but as a black woman, it was really tough. I can be quite open about that. It's still, you know, there's a big conversation around diversity in the sector and it's got a lot better, but there's still some way to go. And at the time when I worked in it, it was tough and I just faced constant obstacles just for doing my job, and I sort of burnt myself out of doing that. And then moved charity sector, and that's where I, you know, Bernardo's was where I really was like, actually it just set my head on fire, really, about just how you can use brand thinking and brand strategy to really make a massive difference on, as it was at Bernardo's, the most vulnerable and hardest to reach children and young people. And helping people, you know, at scale really understand the plight of a group of young people that are just completely falling through the cracks. That was the power of brand. And from there, I never really went back from that, honestly. I did work, I did a brief stint at T-Mobile and then EE, and I loved working there as brand, but I just missed that social change stuff. And I think breadth and love of brands has been a consistent, and wanting to help people has always been a consistent. And in Brand By Me, I've managed to bring all those together.
There's bits of that story that I didn't know. Well, firstly, I didn't know that you're the elder sister, like me. So I wonder if there is some leadership thing in terms of being the eldest of siblings. And there's still time for you to be prime minister.
people keep saying that to me and I'm like, yeah, not now. I'm not sure that, honestly, my life would undergo this public scrutiny. I don't think I would come out well. But I think there are other ways to deliver societal change.
Absolutely.
And I think in driving that. But I haven't ruled it out, I've got to be honest, I haven't ruled it out. That might be the next phase of my career at some point, who knows.
It's so interesting, that kind of take on, you know, working in the law as well, and that there is two sides, and sometimes you have to be on the wrong side, you know, with your own kind of values and social kind of beliefs. So, yeah, it feels like every step you were taking was moving you on the trajectory of getting closer to kind of knowing and being where you are now.
Hindsight is 2020 though, isn't it? So yes, that's the case very much looking back. At the time, I guess one of the things that I've always done, and I would encourage anyone else to do really, is go with your gut and maybe don't be afraid to take risks. And a sense of really knowing who you are as well. I think I was in danger of who I am being really eroded by the time I got to the end of my sort of time in advertising, just because if you're a face that's not fit, there's a lot of pressure on you to conform, and there's a lot of, you get a lot of noise where people will try and tell you, you know, try and give you advice on, you know, maybe ways that you can change so that you'll get ahead, and those ways that you can change are like changing kind of fundamentally who you are, and those people not seeing your strengths because they come in a package that they're not used to seeing when it comes to a leader. And that's one of the things that really fueled my work and our work with Brand By Me on personal brand. I didn't start off doing personal brand at all, and I was really skeptical of the whole concept just because of the people that are named around personal brands are often quite objectionable, self-promoting, dreadful, empty people. I read this article, they said all the Kardashians have a fantastic personal brand, and I can guarantee that was the source of my disdain for the whole thing, until I thought about my past career, and then I started to look at the workplace and understand the conversation around inclusion and diversity, and think, actually, not in the way that it's described in terms of big followings and likes and influencers, but as your brand strategy is about who you are, what you stand for, and how you do what you do brilliantly, there's a real need for that. And that was drawn entirely, then going back and revisiting my own experiences, quite actually painfully at points, and going, this is something that actually I think is a fundamental workplace skill that currently is just not being understood or recognised. And particularly for people who come from underrepresented backgrounds within workplace and within our workplace and within leadership, there's something in this. And there was something around that. I think, you know, whenever you speak your career back to people, it sounds like this master plan. It really wasn't. But I think going with my gut, not being afraid to take risks and not being afraid to walk away from stuff that just is horrendous have stood me in good stead. And then my strategic brain allows me then to look back on it and go, these are the building blocks and here's how you can use it to take you forward.
And you have a really visible presence for championing diversity, both in the charity and media comms industries. You know, you've kind of laid it out, the experiences that you have been through have obviously fed some of that. But I'm wondering if you can talk a bit more about that, because you like mentor, you do articles, you speak on public platforms about this. And I'm wondering what that gives you and that kind of drive to make sure that you are present and visible and having that voice.
I think it comes back to this. If you can't see it, you can't be it. I was really lucky and gifted. Like when I worked in advertising, my very first boss was a black woman, Sarah Jenkins, who's now senior, and she's really very public about diversity too now, but she was my first boss and she was amazing. Loads of integrity, and it's really good to have that as a blueprint when you're early on in your career. And particularly for me as a black woman, it was really helpful to have that, because I understood, although it'd be tough, I knew that that's something I could attain to. It was later where I was like, I don't understand why I'm facing these challenges, but you know, still I was like, no, I can see people that have done it. And I'm doing it, but I could see then from Sarah Jenkins as my first boss, then from then onwards, I was always like, when I moved to my next agency, I was suddenly the most senior black person, and I was like, I'm a senior account manager, how can that happen? When I was working brand side, I guess I, and particularly at Barnardo's, was a very early kind of diversity strategy, way beyond its time, but I came in sort of a bit more senior than that. That was for like grads and also for maybe people at early stage of management. And even then I noted that people would try and recommend me for that diversity program. And I was like, well, this is for early stage managers. And I'm not that, I'm head of at the time. It was like, no, that's not appropriate. And I realized that there was some work to be done in terms of helping people understand the paths that are available to them. And you can do it if you are, you know, for me as a black woman, I can do it then, because I can do it for other black women, women of color, even people who just, you know, from other backgrounds too, because I'm like, actually, I fought this and I can see it. And what I'm not going to try and do is just shoehorn you into whatever diversity program is happening for you just because it's the only thing that's available. I'm going to actually think about you and your strengths and champion you. So I started with my own team, making sure I was championing and supporting the women of colour as it was in my team and around me. And then, you know, that mentoring thing was really, you know, powerful. It's something I always did. But very much from inside and from behind the scenes. It was only when I started at Brand My Me and started to get a bit, just sort of traction, I guess. I remember writing a LinkedIn article when I first started, because I looked back at the ad industry and there was a whole conversation about diversity in adverts, and quite specifically in Christmas ads. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at it and thinking, I can't believe 10 years on, this is still a conversation without very much action. There are some really good people like Selma Nichols, who runs a casting agency called Looks Like Me, and there are any number of really good people sort of starting to speak out. And I thought, I've actually got lived advertising senior experience of this. I can't not speak out. And that's where it came from. And also, I think the other thing is, when I'm in my own business now, there's no comeback. I don't have a boss that's going to go, probably don't speak out on that because you don't want to be pigeonholed as this. Or an organisation is like, I don't want you to speak out on that because, you know, you're going to make us look bad. I don't really have those constraints. I run my own business. Yes, I did used to work at those organisations. I've heard people say that, I'm worried about what impact we'll have on clients. Well, Brand By Me is, you know, led and founded by me, and I'm a black woman. If you don't want to do business with a black woman, then you have other choices. So once the risk in speaking out was removed, I then felt like I had a duty to really speak out on this stuff, and also be kind of identify solutions and quick wins. That from my point of view, I'm not a diversity and inclusion expert, and I really respect people that are. But I could see, I was like, there's a role for brand within this, and there's a role for this conversation, there's a role for me in this conversation. So that's where it came from. And just me trying to do bits that I can to help and reach out to people. There are a lot of people already doing great stuff, so I was keen not to replicate that, but just to work with people already doing great stuff to add my skills and voice where I can.
Yeah, it's great. And you mentioned your LinkedIn article. I love reading stuff that you post because there's some really personal perspectives, and, you know, and I love looking at that and reflecting on that. And I love what you're putting out.
Thank you.
Awesome. So running a company isn't easy, especially not to avoid the elephant in the room. How is COVID-19 impacting on business at present?
So obviously it's had a massive impact. I think uncertainty is really bad for small businesses. It's bad for consultancy. It's bad for brand and communication industries, and sitting at, you know, junction of all of those things, it makes it tough. I think if you're bigger, you can kind of weather the storm a lot easier. What I've found is that there's been things, this is not linked to COVID-19, because even last year with all the kind of Brexit uncertainty, it was the same for the first sort of 6 months of last year. It was really awful for us as a business, and coming into this year it started just to pick up, and then this hits. And I think it's as simple as, I think brand and strategy, when people in crisis, they should be seen as sort of essentials in terms of helping you really understand how you navigate this crisis as a business, as an organization, and help your teams and staff through it. Things like your values and your purpose become essential at this point, even if it's about looking at how to redeploy your purpose. BrewDog, as an example, start making hand sanitizer because here's what we can do to help, and here's our values, and we really want to help, and we're really straightforward. What can we do? That sort of innovative sort of mindset doesn't come out of nowhere. That comes down to your brand and your values. Even if you're not articulating them, even if you don't know that's the case, it is down to your purpose and values, and understanding that, and understanding therefore how you might shift or evolve or change perspective so that you can actually deliver on help. Now, all that stuff is great, but there's a school of leadership that when you go into this sort of crisis, you immediately slash and cut costs, and you cut all the nice to haves like comms, like your brand strategy, like everything, and everything just goes out the window, and you just become very reactive. And that's what I'm seeing at the moment. And it has hit our business in terms of people's ability to, you know, budget cuts, and then, yeah, people's ability to really think about this stuff now. But I also think, I mean, I'm an optimist anyway, but I think it's finite, because I think when any crisis, we never faced anything like this before, so who knows. But I certainly see it a thing where people are like running around and panicking, and rightfully so, and fearful, but that will pass, because ultimately, no matter what happens, we will need to adjust, and people are resilient, and you just will start to sort of be able to sort of pull your head out of the mist and go, okay, here's some stuff I can do, and here's where I might need help. And that's where Brand By Me will be there.
I mean, you are forever an optimist. That's what I love about you. And as I said in the intro, you know, you're always intentional. That's what I love. So you guys will definitely be there. Yeah. And we'll put all your details in the show notes, etc., so people can reach out to you directly. Okay. So from a brand strategy perspective, what are the three top tips that you would share with fellow business owners right now, or the self-employed, in relation to the situation and keeping calm, basically?
From a business owner point of view, very practical, have a massive handle on your finances and understand them, and understand your cash flow. Your cash flow might be terrible at the moment. Like, you know, if money abruptly stops coming in, as it has for many of us, you still need to understand your financial position. You still need to have a handle on, you know, what is the basic minimum cost of operating your business. There is help that is available. I know I'm feeling like many that I'm not eligible for quite a lot of the things because I'm a company director, so I can't access self-employed. I'm not an employee. Well, I am an employee of my own business, so there's something there. I don't get business rates, but there's limited support available, but there is something. And so understanding your financial position at this time is absolutely key. And looking at your costs. And also, you know, one of the things that a lot of people are doing, and I've been doing as well, is having conversations with people. You know, everyone is in this together. Everyone's in the same business. If you've got suppliers, particularly if they're bigger than you and maybe a little bit more secure than you, have a conversation with them about, look, can I take a payment holiday? People are doing that for their mortgages. I've done it with one of my suppliers. I need to take a payment holiday. That sort of conversation now, can we cut down the services? Can we do this? You know, being flexible about payment and stuff. People are very open to it. It would be a very callous business that were like, no. So that's the first thing. I think as a business owner, get clear on your finances. The second thing, and I talked about this using the BrewDog example, is make sure that you have a look at your purpose and values and work out how you can help and where you can add value at this point. I've seen a lot of conversation on LinkedIn where people interpret this as, oh, we can't all work for free, and no one's saying that, but you must be able to make yourself and your services and your business offer relevant at this time and really think about that. And if you can't, then it might be worth you just taking, you know, a step back until you can and working out where and how you're going to be relevant. I've just launched a YouTube show. So it's at youtube.com/brandbyme. And we do weekly on a Fridays at 1:30. And my first one was on how to act, because it's really difficult to know how to act at this time. Mm. But one of the principles I shared, and I think it's absolutely key, is as business owners, and so we must act with empathy, generosity, and community. And they're the principles we must go forward and act with, thinking about, you know, making sure that we understand, appreciate, and respect what's going on for other people in our audiences this time, even if it's not the same as what's going on for us, and especially if it's not the same as what's going on for us. Generosity, so again, that thing around, look, how can we help, rather than, you know, what do we need, is kind of how can we help. And then community is about creating connections and, you know, true collaborations. I love the sense of community, and I'm really loving that at this time. And I think because there's such a public sense of community, as business owners, we massively need to kind of contribute our part to that. I get offered quite a lot of collaborations, I'm using quote marks. With a true collaboration, there must be something that is strong and benefit for both parties. And as a business owner, you really need to think about that. You can't just go in with what you want and say, oh, let's collaborate. It's a partnership, because it isn't. If there's not mutual benefit, there just isn't. And building that sense of community and being able to offer and offer as much as you're asking for is really important. And I think as, you know, independent, as self-employed, we can go, oh, you know, we're not getting any help, and this is a nightmare. But actually being able to kind of drive a very positive conversation about building community and reaching out and building that sense of connection is really important. Yeah, that's kind of my tips, I guess, is understand your finances, use your purpose and brand to figure out how you can help, and lead with empathy, generosity, and community.
Yeah, they're awesome tips for right now. And I love that you set up a channel on YouTube to discuss what's going on, and for small business and like building a community. It's so like true what you're saying to your own values.
I love that you said, oh, you know, you're really visible. From a business point of view, we are in a very crowded sector, and, you know, as brand consultancies, and also there are lots of other agencies that will tend to stray into brand consultancy inadvertently or deliberately, whereas it's our specialism. So I really wanted to create a channel where, yeah, we could have this conversation, people could come in and really benefit from what we can offer, but also to kind of extend our reach. So I said, this isn't a channel just for small businesses like us. You know, when we did the first one, we had all sorts of different organisations, you know, people from larger organisations dialing in just with the view of how do I operate my brand as leader, people who weren't, you know, in brand teams and, you know, working within brands, but were in leadership positions within organisations. And I think that's really, I think that's one of the big things at the moment, is that everybody in an organisation should have ownership for the brand, not just the brand team tightly controlling everything. But that involves people outside, you know, if your brand is not your background and you're needing to lead and you need to understand brand, there is a process that you need to go on to kind of help you understand that and how that plugs into what you're doing. So hopefully for those people specifically as well, it will give them a really good safe way of learning and understanding and starting to think about brand challenges through the lens of their own role. And that's what I'm looking to do, and we'll just, yeah, we'll keep going with it. You know, it is fun, it is really nice to have the interaction, and yeah, and that sense of community at this time too. So people are like, you know, within like people commenting, we're all like finding shared themes, even if they come from very different backgrounds and businesses.
Yeah, that's awesome. So things are not bloody typical at the moment, but I wonder, is there a typical day or a rhythm or to the way the business generally runs, which, you know, we are now in a very different world to what we were a month ago?
At the moment, no. Well, no, I guess, yeah, there kind of is, in terms of the rhythm of Zoom calls is something that is absolutely consistent. I think that is one that I think is consistent for everybody, you know, from a work and personal point of view. Yeah. Zoom calls, house party from personal point of view. No, there's not a typical day. As I said, there's a seasonality to our business, which is really interesting. It works differently to other businesses. So I'll say that the summer is usually Brand By Me's busiest time, and often summer holidays can be dead, but I think when other organisations aren't busy, it gives people the time to think about and space to think about things like brand and strategy. And I'm thinking, no matter what's happening with this, I think I'm hopeful that that will still be the case. And yeah, but is there a typical day? Do I, you know, no, not really. No, there isn't. I was trying to think of anything, but no, there isn't. What I've tried to develop, but I'm not very good at even, is having some sort of routine. Obviously, I do have a productivity ritual and some things that I get done and some ways of doing things, but that's a little bit different to a typical day, which I don't think there is one. And I like the fact that it isn't, honestly.
So can you tell me, what skills do you need to be a brand strategy consultant?
Well, the thing I love, and the reason for the me in Brand By Me, was because it's not Brand By Colette. That would be, that's my Twitter handle. I would call the business Brand By Colette if it was just me. But I like the fact that at its best, there's a breadth of, and you can be very different from another brand strategist. So I will do it very differently to another brand strategist, but in a really good way, because actually it's about your experiences and your skill set, and you can really use that to hone and develop your skills in facilitating strategy. But I think there are shared skills. I think you need to be a really good facilitator, really able to bring clarity. I think it helps if you are a person that's interested in what goes on around you. I don't think you can be a strategist if you're not really interested in the world around us and people and how they operate. Yeah, having an interest for and passion for brands and what's going on with brands, even if they're not ones you work on, and looking around the brands and stuff is really important as well, because actually you'll get curious. You'll be like, oh, I love what that brand's doing. How are they doing it? And then you sort of deconstruct it. I really have a bit of an issue with people who go, oh yeah, strategy is just about asking the right questions. No, it isn't. It is absolutely about asking the right questions, but it's also knowing what to do with those answers. Mm-hmm. It's about facilitating people so they can give you meaningful answers to those questions. Mm-hmm. And it's about then being able to understand what you're hearing. So I see a lot of strategy projects where people have just asked a lot of questions and then kind of left the organization with them, or really not understood how to get the answers out. So I feel quite strongly about that. You really need to have an understanding and a good ear, so you're hearing, you can pick up and understand challenges even if people aren't hearing, and articulate stuff that people haven't been able to articulate before. Mm. and have that ability to sort of bring things to the surface if necessary, where people don't know quite how to articulate or frame them. Not putting words in people's mouths, that would be horrible, but actually just the ability to translate and interpret.
Okay, and then what advice? So if someone was aspiring to work in strategy, what advice would you give them?
Really hone your curiosity and your listening skills. Definitely, definitely work on your facilitation. And if necessary, get some training on facilitation, because lots of strategy is about facilitating people and facilitating things for outcomes. I think a very practical tip, but you should have read a little bit around what strategy is. There's a lot of strategy that isn't strategy out there. There's a lot of bad strategy out there. So I think you being really clear on that is key. There's a really good book called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy that I recommend you read, because actually it is what it is. It will help you spot bad strategy and help you maybe not do bad strategy or drift into doing it.
So can I ask you, what's been one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
A combination of sticky floors and glass ceilings. And before I set up my own business. So the idea that actually you hit a certain level and you just can't progress. And it's either a glass ceiling or it's a sticky floor. And I found it increasingly it was sticky floors. So people are really happy to keep you at the level you're at. They're happy for you to act up, to have huge remits of responsibility, but they won't pay you anymore or give you the title that comes along with it. And I found that quite a lot. And specifically, yes, I will be honest, that is because of being a Black woman and people not seeing that as leaders. You get kind of attuned to hearing that over time. I'm not going to say, sorry to be clear though, being a Black woman is not challenging for my career. It was perceptions of that sticky floors thing. Actually, being a Black woman is amazing. And that is not the challenge, just so we're clear on that. Now, since setting up my own business, it's left a legacy in terms of mindset in a positive and negative way. So in terms of, from a positive point of view, it's given me a really big kind of fighting spirit. I'm very determined. But from a negative point of view, I'm struggling to articulate it. It's like maybe expecting poverty of opportunity as opposed to expecting opportunities to come my way. And I think that's something from a mindset point of view sometimes I need help with. So I've got a really brilliant business coach and she really helps me with this, you know, spotting opportunity and really, you know, leveraging it and not getting to a place where I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but that's not going to really happen because sticky floor or whatever, because that stuff's not relevant. But it kind of leaves a lasting legacy in terms of maybe your confidence and your entrepreneurialism, maybe. And for some people, it fuels their entrepreneurialism. For me, I found it kind of sometimes held it back. But for other people, it saps their resilience. Whereas for me, it's really built my resilience mm-hmm. and given me this sense of fight. So I think there's, you know, there's sort of different sides of it. But yeah, the challenge, I think, you know, definitely for my career, it was always about poverty of opportunity. And that thing where, you know, you have to work much harder than anyone else to get the same results has resulted in burnout. And still, I have a bit of an issue in terms of making sure that I'm working in a balanced way so that I don't burn myself out.
And all of our experiences, you know, like you said, some people take it in one way and other people take it another way. They're like within you until you can work through them. So, I mean, I think that mindset that you said about poverty of opportunity, like I've definitely experienced that as well through my experiences in my life, and it's such a hard thing to shake because you can feel yourself doing it as well, but it's that toggle inside when you're like, oh, you know, this is what I know and this is where I want to be.
Yeah, and I think this is where, I mean, gosh, your whole podcast is set up around that. It's like, actually, we want greater than 11%. It's set up around that, actually, acknowledgement that this poverty opportunity is something that is there for women. And yes, more so, I would say, for women of colour or anyone that's kind of at the intersection. So if you're, you know, something and something, a woman, an LGBT, you know, woman, black, whatever, you know, so, you know, with a disability, whatever that looks like, I think there is that. But acknowledging that and then not letting that be the imprint that sort of then drives your career, not letting it be a self-fulfilling prophecy because you experience it, you start spotting it, not letting it be that. And I think that is about, therefore, making sure that you do, if necessary, rather than just getting trapped in your own head and kind of circling around it, is getting help. That's where it helps with things like mentors, but proper mentors. I think if you're in an arts organisation, it is to be sponsors. So people that are not only just mentoring you like passively, but also providing opportunities for you mm-hmm. and championing for you. And people to take active sponsorship and sponsoring people that do not look exactly the same as them. And when I say that, I don't mean people, I mean the other, I was trying to work out, 89%. That aren't women in this sector is kind of looking at it and going, you guys have a responsibility to make sure you're not just sponsoring more of the same, but actually you're looking to sponsor talent and you've got a different lens by which you're looking for talent. It's not just some sort of misguided thoughts around meritocracy, because all we'll do is reinforce it. And then it's also about us being really clear about our skills and strengths so that we don't let people undermine them because they're trying to fit us into a mold that is just sort of eroding who we are.
Absolutely. And I'm definitely going to just reinforce everything you just said about mentoring, sponsorship, but I'm also, and I've talked about it loads on the podcast, you know, therapy, because you mentioned imprint, and imprints are really hard to shake. If it's something, one, you've either inherited at a very young age, or it's something that you've like found in your career that you've, you know, evolved as a being imprinted by someone else.
Totally endorse the therapy point, actually. I think there was, I'm not sure if it's the case now, but there was a real stigma about it. And I think, you know what, move on, because honestly, I think doing the work on yourself is really important, whether that comes through coaching, mentoring, therapy, and probably all of the above,
yeah.
I think is really important so that you don't let those blind spots then become the blueprint for your career going forward. Despite the fact, actually, that the way they've been developed may not have been anything to do with you or your fault, certainly you get to an age where actually you have agency over how you address those and how you tackle those. Doing that hard work on yourself is really important.
Yes, love it. All right, so tell me, what do you love about what you do?
Ah, so many things. And there's a light bulb in our logo because I really love light bulb moments and I like providing them for other people. So there's this moment when you're taking groups of leaders through, you know, a process to define their brand. And there's this point where people are like, oh, and this is what it is. And that's just gorgeous. I do like people. I'm interested by people. So I used to go, we help organizations. And I thought, nah, we help leaders. We help people build brands. Because that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And I really am interested in people and, you know, how they operate and how brands impact them and how they then can lead and that sort of thing. And I like being a leader and I like, but in a positive way, I like really leading change. And I've never been afraid to put myself at the forefront of something, even if it's a bit prickly. And that you said, actually, every career move you've made, you've said, I kind of gone ahead. But part of that is not being afraid to put myself at the sharp end of something. Mm. If there's a risk and you're like, well, there's 50-50 that this could either come back and really bite you in the bum, or it's 50% that this will really help you win and move forward, I'm going to take it, because I know that if it's 50-50 chance, I'm going to make that like 75-80% chance it will go my way, because I know that, because I like people, I like leading stuff, I like driving change, and all of these things are things I can do within the, you know, the role I have now run by me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love it. So how do you fuel your own creativity? Because Brand By Me is super creative and you're drawing on lots of different strands of creativity and experience. So, you know, how do you top yourself up and how do you inspire yourself?
I love reading, so I read a lot. I'm a member of a couple of really good groups of creatives and I get very inspired by seeing what other people are doing in a really good way. I like talking to other creatives and hearing what people are doing. That is really, I find that really motivating and inspiring, and bouncing ideas off people too. So I like looking at lists and things to see what people are doing in creative space, really interested stuff, and thinking, actually, that's cool. How can we make that work? Or what would, how would we do that? Or whatever. You know, the definition of an extrovert is that one, in terms of taking your energy and stimulus from outside. That's so me. Like, I really look to the outside world to fuel and drive my creativity. It's actually great. My husband is a drummer and I get to hear him practice and play and experiment. And I can't tell you how that has really fueled my creativity, honestly. My whole family are musicians, in fact. And so I'm not, but my brother is, my sister is. And then my husband is now. Hearing him, like, he's using this time to really hone his skills as a jazz drummer, and he's doing all sorts of little experimentation. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about, like, the nature of practice and the nature of mastery, and there are just parallels we find in creativity that are just brilliant. My mind was kind of blown when I met him, because I didn't know that I sort of needed that in my life, but it's mm-hmm. been really, not him, obviously. What I mean is that creative influence so close to home. Obviously, you know, we're married, and I was very clear when I met him 5 years ago that this, you know, this guy is something in him. But I think that sort of creativity in close contact and those conversations about creativity and honing it, and that have been really great.
Oh my gosh, having like live jazz being played for you at this point in time must be absolutely lovely.
Oh, it's lovely. My brother as well did this, like, he did a YouTube live concert a few weeks ago, and I was like, I think it's just so what the world needs, you know, because I don't think we're going to be at a stage where large-scale live events are going to happen for ages. Mm. But I'm really hoping that people will get to a model of online that they're willing to pay for and invest in, because we're just, I mean, it's just so gorgeous. And making sure you still are able to access the stuff that really influences and fuels you is really important.
Mm, for sure. So look, I know asking this kind of question is a little bit random, because obviously we don't know where things are at, but you've got your YouTube channel up and running and that's going out every Friday. So what are the plans for the next few weeks, months in this uncertain time in COVID lockdown?
I am doing a few things. So yeah, we've definitely got the YouTube live show every Friday at 1:30. And the theme is how to steer your brand through turbulent times. And it's not specifically COVID-19 related, although we are in like pretty much the most turbulent time we've ever faced, but it's really about looking at different aspects of it. At an organisational brand level, personal brand level, we'll look at it from all aspects. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we've got a questionnaire we're doing about bold, brilliant and meaningful brands. We've looked at great brands and we're like, they're bold, doing stuff, you know, really differently and daring to take those risks. Brilliant, so they are actually, in terms of not just from a creative craft, but that comes into it, but also from, in terms of the strength of the organization, they're doing some really, really great stuff, not just good, but all like, you know, mediocre, one in the middle of the pack. They're doing really great stuff with the kind of ability to innovate and take sort of maybe calculated risks and stuff is really moving them forward. But they're also meaningful. So they are actually purpose-led and using the impact and the creativity and the brilliance and that bold risks for good in some way. And so we've gone bold, brilliant, meaningful brands, and we've got a questionnaire out just to ask people about what they think of them, what's stopping them from building them, and that sort of thing. And we're looking at pulling together a research report from the questionnaire and some case studies, which is really exciting. And then the third thing is, based on our experience of building brands and helping organizations build brands, and I said we help leaders, we normally do that as part of brand work, so it would be like developing brand strategy. We've taken the kind of leadership development bit and looked at, okay, this is really about helping leaders drive change and bringing together very diverse groups of leaders from across organizations. We're in the process of developing a proposition that's all about helping, we're calling them hardworking heads of and above, but people that are like not C-suite, but below, but just below, drive change at scale within organisations, and looking at taking what is a passion for social change, sustainability, diversity, and looking at how you can use that to deliver change for your organisation rather than getting blocked. And so we're developing a programme around that that hopefully will launch towards the end of May, called Bold, Brilliant, Meaningful Leaders.
That sounds absolutely awesome. And that you're so busy as well. I love that, because I think in these times that are very uncertain and slightly stressful, it's easy to just get sidetracked by all that. But yeah, as per usual, you're intentional, you're optimistic, you're absolutely inspiring. So yeah, it sounds incredible.
Thank you.
So coming to the end of the interview, thank you so much for making the time today. But also, you know, like, I'm really lucky because we get to catch up once a month, but it's been so great having you on Greater Than 11%. And, you know, we've been planning it for the last few months, so I'm glad that, you know, we've managed to squeeze it in despite logistic issues. But something I ask everyone before they go is two questions. Is there a career or job in the creative industries that you know little about and you've always been curious about? And then potentially I could get someone on the podcast and we can talk about that role. And also someone that you would recommend in the creative industries that we get on Greater Than 11%.
I love the idea. And I'm, you know, from when back in my advertising days, going to shoots, I've always loved the idea of kind of film and TV production and stuff, and people that are on that side of it. I'm always very interested to hear about, you know, what that looks like and what creativity looks like on that side. And with that in mind, I think Bumble would be amazing because she's had a very interesting production journey, including her new role now.
Would love to have her on. So yeah, that is a great suggestion because yeah, she's such a champion of others as well.
And she's a connector. And I think that's really interesting. As that's how we met, so that's amazing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, thank you so much for your time today, Colette.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.